this extends back to the Great Depression in the 1930s, but in the agriculture industry, even further back than that, agriculture was already in a depression before it hit the rest of the economy. And the mechanism to try to support farm incomes, we had so many people who were farmers, and their incomes really lagged the rest of society. And we really wanted, we as Americans wanted to support agriculture. We also wanted, you know, there's some notion that we want to make sure that we have plentiful food at cheap prices. And so the mechanism to do that was the government installed a series of price supports, meaning that they would guarantee that farmers got at least a set level of price, a price that was viewed as providing a safety net. It was viewed as being at least a break-even price, or provided some safety net underlying their prices and therefore their incomes. So if we think about the crops that were supported, corn, wheat, cotton, rice, the other feed grains, grain sorghum, barley, oats, that basic set of agricultural, large-scale commercial agricultural commodities, all of those things can be stored. Milk can't be stored in its normal fluid form that we see. And so milk, because it's perishable, and so milk has to be stored in some kind of processed form. And the normal, you know, how we get around that for agriculture for thousands of years is, how do we get milk to a storable form? Is we learn to make cheese, and we learn to make all these other dairy products that have a little longer shelf life. But, you know, particularly cheese in that case, we make butter. We also, you know, as we got more modern technology, we dry it, take the water out, and we take the fat out, and you have a non-fat dry milk powder. So really, those are the kind of the storable forms of milk that then you have to do something about, because we can't store fluid milk for very long. And so that really makes that fundamental difference. And I think it's something else that's important for consumers to recognize. You know, if you go to the grocery store and you look at some of the items you may buy, if you read that ingredient label, one of the things you find is we use a lot of milk in a huge variety of all the products we buy. So it really affects, it's got some wide-ranging effects if some kind of solution doesn't get found. It really sweeps through a lot of the commonly purchased items that we buy. You know, one of the big changes in milk markets is really over the last number of years, say 20 years, is the huge change in how us consumers consume dairy products. We drink less fluid milk. By that I mean we drink less gallon jugs of milk. But we consume even more milk than ever before in products like cheese. If you think about how much pizza we like to eat, you know, that's cheese on the pizza. We consume a lot more milk in these other forms than just fluid milk. If you really like Greek yogurt, and the recent boom in Greek yogurt, that's a booming area for dairy consumption. It's changing how we as consumers consume milk. We're still consuming, you know, per capita, more milk than ever, but we're doing it in different ways. And as new products get introduced into the marketplace and we find that we like them, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, who even thought of Greek yogurt? But that's probably the most booming product in the dairy case right now is that, and consumers like it. We're changing our tastes and preferences for how we consume milk.